Okay, Duna, I have come around and I'm actually going to thank you for asking me to give this talk, even though my initial reaction was very, very different, as you can easily imagine, because it's given me the opportunity to actually go to a conference from the first to the last talk, which I admit I haven't done in quite a long time. I told her right away I wasn't going to do a summary, and about on the second day it was very clear that it was impossible, with the vast majority of talks actually being so good, to even try to summarize, because I could just put up the program. So what I actually thought I should do is pick one aspect and tell you my musings about it, and what I've actually learned quite a bit doing this week here, namely, is studying the Milky Way just fun or also broadly important to astrophysics, with the general underlying theme that, you know, it is more gratifying if even people who work on different things find your work important. However, I do have to say that, you know, it can be so much fun that sometimes not so relevant that you have this. But, you know, if you look at papers, proposals, if you read them, they say things like, studying the Milky Way is a crucial complementary approach to understanding galaxy formation through the high Z observations. Or they say the Milky Way is a powerful testbed for CDM predictions on small scales. Or they say abundance ratios of metal-poor stars do tell us about the very first generation of stars. And, you know, all of these kind of statements, which clearly these are, you know, saying other people should care about the work we do. And the question is really, how much does reality live up to this ambition? And I want to start with a few sociological observations, at least. This may be the Milky Way meeting that has had by far the highest fraction of self-declared cosmologists in attendance. It also, I think, among the traditional, maybe the first Milky Way meeting, where the words, we need to differentiate whether monolithic collapse and Zuhlensohn is right, has never crept up. So even most Milky Way researchers have moved beyond the 1970s in that respect. It has also not been said that very small galaxies are the building blocks of big galaxies, which you can also read very often, which, while they may be contained in them, you know, you will not build houses from dust specks. I will come back in defense of the little galaxies in just a minute, so don't worry. What I want to do is just actually give a quick run through what I actually thought were really not taking the delta T of 15 years timescale, but the last 5 years, where I think the field really has moved along dramatically. And I should give you a warning, as opposed to Scott Tremaine, I am actually a pathological optimist. So if you will have a chance to actually voice your doubts in just a minute. So if I just go to this morning's talk and many other things, it was not a big part of this galaxy, but, you know, the galactic center and the black hole is just a beautiful piece of art. And, you know, the impact on even the physics community, let me just, not only did, you know, a month ago, Reinhard Genzel get the Shaw Prize, also last week, Andrea got a MacArthur. So, you know, certified geniuses now attend Milky Way conferences. The other point, next thing, it's slightly, you know, in descending order of things that I find. Let's not forget, the realm of galaxies over the last couple of years has been expanded by a factor of 100 almost in stellar mass downward. Pathetically small galaxies, galaxy formation, and I, you know, by galaxies I mean stars that have resulted from condensed baryons at the centers of dark matter potential well. This process seems to work in small potential wells too at spectacularly inefficient ways. The other part that I think I used to I used to yawn at many abundance talks. I don't anymore. And you know, part of it, the various aspects, I get back to some of the others, that really the last 5 years have seen small samples of stars at the moment merged that are so metal poor that they may very well have been enriched by a single supernova. That's a field that's currently in a beautiful fishing phase, and the backwards working to what was a supernova, etc., is obviously still a point of great controversy. But at least there is now the potential for very clean tests is there. Then, through Sloan and other surveys, the last 5 years have really seen high fidelity panoramic images of the Milky Way stellar distribution, and we'll get to some of the implications, but one of the upshots is many of the pencil beam or sparse surveys, you now understand why there were violent controversies. It's just, you know, adjacent pencil beams, the Milky Way may look different, and if your prior is that it should look smooth, then, well, you have a pointless argument. And indeed, depending on your point of view, either a wealth or a plethora of stellar substructure has emerged, both in the Milky Way and in M31. And to my mind, that's still, you know, really by far the qualitative nicest confirmation that that wild dance of subhalos being disrupted, being shredded, merging, etc., that you see in movies that, depending on which side of the Atlantic you're on, either are orange or light pink, and, you know, etc. But, you know, in Andromeda and Milky Way, you see it happen, and as we've seen, the crude tests say, actually in a fashion that it seems to agree quite well. And along with the explosion in data, now it seems like every self-respecting high-powered cosmological simulators has discovered their love for simulating the Milky Way. And I think that is proven in many respects to be very useful, from the dark matter detections to the little satellites. And also, I just note, you know, it is now starting to be, I don't, you know, argue whether Chris Brooks' simulation is the last word, but, you know, the embarrassment that it was almost impossible to make a Milky Way-looking galaxy on the computer has been lifted. Whether it's the right solution isn't clear yet, but good solutions may start to emerge. Areas of undramatic change. There are some things that haven't changed in 15 years. The first one is that Carlos Frank still pretends that he desperately wants to rule out CDM. And that, I shall I forecast whether he will still say that at his retirement speech, that his career was a failure because he just... one thing where, I don't want to say there hasn't been improvement, but it's been undramatic. The mass-bearing components, the bulge, the bar, the thin disk, the spiral arms. I don't think there has been any paradigm shifting in the basic parameters here have improved, but not dramatic. So in some sense, the different components of the Milky Way in the last years have had dramatically different H to M ratios. That's the hoopla to mass ratio, you know, because indeed there has been, you know, let's not forget, the stellar halo is, you know, I mean, the baryons are a small fraction of everything, the stars are a small fraction of the baryons, and the halo is a tiny fraction of the stellar distribution. Nonetheless, I think that shows that actually, just because of its merging origin, the longer dynamical timescales, the less phase mixing, they prove to be diagnostic. So much of what the halo is, it's just a good diagnostic tool, and the stars themselves do not matter so much. I also note that about the age distribution, the Milky Way disk, well, there has not been terribly much new. Also, the shape, and in particular, the fact that despite gigaparticle simulations, there ought to be a cusp of the dark matter in the halo. All mechanisms to get rid of that cusp have been, you know, unpersuasive. There hasn't been much new on the central shape of the dark matter halo. And that's one thing where perhaps this has been the wrong conference. I tremendously enjoyed it. I should particularly compliment Mark on this is beautiful talk, but the question of whether that's an area where extragalactic and galactic star formation have cross-fertilized as fruitfully as Milky Way structure and cosmology wasn't obvious to me, but I'll leave that perhaps to a comment for you later. So let me go to a couple of three of these areas and say a few more things. Abundance metallicities, I think, have been really a prominent theme. And there, too, I think progress has come from the cosmologists no longer ignoring or not being able to say much about abundances. And the abundance people abandoning the spherical cow. Just because, you know, Jason Tomlinson's talk, for example, you know, where one should expect the first stars, and again, I want to admonish language cleanliness, first in chemistry, first in age, needs to be ever more apart. I think that whether that means we really should make a big effort of look for very metal-poor stars in the bulge, deep down in there, despite all the practical difficulties, is a worthwhile question to pursue. And I think also, you know, Catherine has shown that the cosmological context is important when you say, well, the little satellites don't have the same alpha over Fe than the halo. The one can't make the others. You've got to think of there is a population. Some of it gets shredded early. Others continue to evolve, get shredded late, etc. And then these things, if you have that mindset, things can get resolved. The other part, which I had mentioned previously, is the growing sample of very little poor stars. And my personal guess, I have optimism, being really an outsider, that before LOFAR, SKA, before JWST or whoever gets any evidence for really drastically different IMF very early in the universe, I do think there's a very good chance that the next 5 years may bring quite dramatic progress here. Whether the tiny dwarf galaxies turn out to be treasure troves for this, not, I'm intrigued but confused at the moment. I think everyone just needs to wait what happens. If you think back to Mario Juric's talk this afternoon, the number of stars where you can measure metallicity as a function of position and velocity and really make these metallicity maps, see that some blobs have a chemical tag to it, and you know what the gradients are. There, it's clear that we have, you know, they're beautiful maps. The context is not yet entirely clear. It'll be interesting from my perspective whether when it comes to modeling and comparison with simulations, it's obscene that you can take broadband colors and get metallicities from it that may be almost good enough. So who wins, the spectroscopists or the photometrists in the end? I actually think will be an interesting thing to watch, where of course one should say the photometry can only be trusted because it's based on cross-calibration with the vast samples of spectroscopy. So now, the other part is really those ridiculously faint satellite galaxies. You know, I don't need to say much about the milestones. I actually do want to talk a little bit about where I think there are important questions that need to be sorted out. You know, in my graduate class, I explain to students the only viable definition, to my mind, galaxy is, it is baryon drivel at the bottom of dark matter potential wells. Whether that is true in all the cases that now have constellation names is not entirely clear. So that will actually be hard work to establish that, extensively discussed. Then the question whether we know there is, with CD galaxies and other things, an upper limit to galaxy formation. James mentioned that and discussed it yesterday. Whether in stellar mass or in the mass of the host halo, there's a clear lower limit to galaxy formation. It's starting to smell like it, but I don't think it's settled.
Definitely not stellar mass.
That is true. I think either one, but anyway, unnecessarily strong opinions on many directions have been voiced, and I think it'll just take a couple of years to settle out. Or, to my mind, you know, whether falling into the halo has anything to do with it. It was mentioned that LSST can find the ridiculously small ones to 400 kiloparsecs. The somewhat bigger ones, whether actually space is full of these tiny things, will be interesting to find out. And Oleg showed us that actually now that the data is good enough that even these little beasts have complex star formation histories that actually you cannot match very easily. So I think, you know, this is at some level, in my mind, we've just discovered brown dwarfs, now you've got to do a couple of years of brown dwarf physics. You know, the same phenomenon, you've extended to lower masses by a couple orders of magnitude. All right, let me talk about the last part, the fine-scale structure of galaxies, right, that has kind of been third theme. And let me first talk about mapping, because that part has made better progress than digesting the maps, which has proven to be a more complicated thing. Right? Let's not forget, the Milky Way M31 looks terribly frayed. In real space, that there are now beautiful maps. In velocity space, you can reject the hypothesis of smoothness, but the maps are, by their nature, at the moment, not yet that beautiful. And indeed, interpretive metrics, you call them model, just ways to say, is what I see in this substructure, what I got out of simulations, I think clearly is still in a very primitive stage. And I personally always draw comfort from the fact that any of the funkiness you see in the Milky Way, in some broad sense, you also see in M31. The disk is frayed, there's a big ring, and all kinds of other stuff. So clearly pushing on M31 hard is very worthwhile. M81 is already very far away, and then it just gets consecutively harder. So it's not clear to me that the great pain to go to M81, fine, they have three examples, right? But you would actually, the cosmic variance you get from 3 versus 2 is not that much different. And so, of course, the other thing that has happened is that indeed Giga particle simulations provide a dark matter context that is approaching the resolutions that you, or in many ways, has the resolution that you need for the comparison with the observations. So we've seen, of course, yesterday afternoon discussion, it actually, I learned about the differences in the simulations, and so I found this very educational. I had an evil thought afterwards that let's presume Fermi actually finds these hints. The discussion about the simulations will unfortunately be moot, because and the question, if it doesn't see anything, whether the simulations really help you that much, is also not entirely clear, but it's very, you know, it's obvious that they do inspire and trigger those searches because they make specific predictions. So in this sense, they are enormously helpful. So Julia has decided that after 3,500 citations in total or whatever, it is time that NFW drifts into the archive of historical things, and you all should learn about the Inasto profile. And, I mean, one of the things that I just put down here, that indeed, you know, you compare the substructures, you compare the little things, yep, could have come out of the model, looks good. I mean, I think there is actually some point to Carlos's everlasting chant that, you know, fine, you do one more test, and I guess ultimately you may run out of steam, but I think here the Milky Way provides a truly new regime that hasn't been tested in that way before. So let me give you just a potential outlook for the next 5 years. The one thing that is good and bad is that the data flood will continue. I think the e-fold, the quality and quantity of data, the e-folding timescale, will remain 1 to 2 years for the next, perhaps not quite decade, but you know that's about where it is. And sometimes too many new data keep you from thinking about what you're doing with them. I think, as we've seen, at least very credible dark matter detection tests will happen, and wouldn't it just be lovely if this pathetic little lump known as SIGWI-1 or whatever, you know, actually provides the prime target to detect. The initial discoverers aren't here, and they would, you know, I mean. It's not that pathetic. That's good. Finally, speak. No, I. It's okay. Then, you know, I think there will be clearly things that are of great generic interest about galaxy formation. I do think, as I said, I'm almost willing to bet that clear and only semi-controversial existence about the IMF very early on will exist in 5 years. And for the black hole, there will be beautiful general relativity effects, and whether the black hole spins or not, well, let's see, that is a dicey issue. But clearly, all of these things, I think, are both of broad astrophysical interest and can only be done through the approaches, or most likely be done astrophysically through the approaches that have been discussed here in this meeting. So I actually do think that while, of course, like all good proposals, there is still a hoopla factor in these statements, it becomes more and more true to reality. So before I completely lose, you know, fortunately Scott is not here, so, you know, I can't just do a pure optimistic one. I do think, indeed, occasionally, I do have some, you know, conceptual concerns. What is it that one wants to rule out? That's what the hard physicist would say. But there I would take Andy's last talk as a fine example. You know, I don't think they're particularly good, well-motivated hypotheses about the planet population in the bulge. You know, so there isn't something that you shoot down, but it's manifestly so much fun, so interesting that, you know, who cares? And indeed, I do think that we will remain, we've seen it here, but we will remain in a phase for quite a while where our understanding will seriously lag behind the increasing database and observational evidence. Anyway, the actual executive summary for this meeting that I have is here. I thought this was really one of the best meetings I've been to in last years. Duna, in particular, Andrew, and Matthias, who just left, I think we should all give them a hand for organizing this meeting.
Tour de force, wonderful. Questions, comments, criticisms? Things left out?
Augmentations?
Things unsaid? It's a nice audience. James. Oh.
I just have a really brief comment on your previous slide where you talk about what hypothesis are we going to rule out. I think one thing that's kind of fun, although I'm not sure how fundamentally important it is that, you know, if LSST does find many hundreds of satellites, for example, then you can place a pretty hard limit on the free streaming scale of dark matter. If assuming they're actually all in dark matter halos, which, Wilson, we follow them up with a giant telescope, whatever, you can place a pretty tight constraint on the free streaming scale of dark matter by just simply counting galaxies around the Milky Way. That's kind of neat.
Mm-hmm. Can I comment on that? I have two comments. Huh? Thank you. I have two comments. One is that there was essentially no discussion of gas. And that's a massive field where a lot of progress is being made. Mm-hmm. I agree it's more complex than the stars and the abundances. You mentioned specifically about on very small scales, gas accreting onto to make stars. But I'm on about the bigger scale of gas throughout the entire local IGM. So that's a very big field. Mm-hmm. That's my first comment. That was left out for the entire meeting. I'm not bothered. That's fine.
Martha and Leo also gave talks.
Second comment, which I think is much more appropriate given the structure of this meeting, I would like to encourage a lot more astronomers to embrace astroparticle physics. I mean, it's amazing how few astronomers have little or no idea about quantum field theory, QED, QCD, all this stuff. I think a lot more of us should embrace this far better, because it really is the impending revolution, in a very large extent. So I think we should have, that's one area where I do think we'll see a lot more astronomers shift, rather than just have the physicists who have got this, they keep saying how theirs is the pure field, but in fact their field is vanishing all over the place. They need to move towards us, but we need to move towards them, because really, when I go to these astroparticle physics meetings, I find the astronomers are mostly floundering and don't really understand the basic issues being discussed. So I would say that in future meetings, I think we're going to see more of the crossover session we had with you and with Carlos and Julio and with Bernard. I think we'll have a lot more of that in future years in just classical galactic structure.
I wanted to make a comment on my seeming short shrifting of the ISM and other things. I mean, for example, I mean, one of the questions, the warp, mapping the warp, and understanding its particular geometry. I personally, you know, I grew up on galaxy dynamics. I love that stuff. The question is, however, whether people who study the rest of galaxy population really say, fine, if you understand that warp, you know, in some sense, actually, Martin's talk said, well, you know, the particular geometry of that warp may not be of the broadest general importance. So I think that, to my mind, falls into the category worth understanding by itself, but it's not obvious whether the rest of the galaxy population needs to care about it.
Okay. It's a question from Catherine.
Well, it's not a question. I was going to make a statement.
A correction.
So I'm sorry. I'm an astronomer and astrophysicist by training. I'm proud of it, and I don't need to. Sorry. I don't need to work on CDM, Lander CDM. I think we've got consistency check with Lander CDM here, and the small halos are interesting. So that's interesting. I'll leave that to James. I don't need to work on astroparticle physics. I want to work on galaxy formation. And we can do that here now. Right? Okay. So I think that's a huge...
But
Your
students and postdocs
scan. I think galaxy formation is a huge thing in the next 5-10 years here in the local group. Right?
Yeah. Why should we follow them off the cliff?
I think you're about to see some very interesting revolutions where those fields merge. I think people aren't ready for it, but it's happening. And I'm not just talking about this stuff. There's other stuff happening. It's a very big field, potentially. Questions, comments, corrections? Look, we'll move on to Mark now.
I guess I have to speak up and defend the gas bags. I guess what I would say is there has actually been substantial progress in cross-pollination between the sort of galaxy gas and extragalactic. I mean, we haven't yet gotten to the point where I think the high Z star formation people are that usefully communicating with the galaxy and you know, more local. But I think we have gotten to the point where people who used to look at their little, you know, star-forming region Taurus in the Milky Way, and, you know, if you mentioned to them that other galaxies might have interesting star formation too, were horrified, are starting to talk to people who look at least nearby galaxies. And we are, you know, there has been a revolution in the observations of nearby galaxies such that we now have maps of galactic disks in H1 and CO and, you know, 24-micron emission tracing star formation. And where there's sort of a gap is, I don't know how much that information and, you know, the new ideas that are coming out of that have been communicated to people who spend most of their time worrying about stars. I mean, so certainly in the galaxy simulation game, it's still, we use the Kennicott law. And, you know, the Kennicott law was great, but that was 1998, and the field is starting to move past that, and I don't think that information has quite filtered out to everyone else.
There's a hand up over here.
So, being one of those people who have come from astrophysics, from particle physics to astrophysics, I do believe that astrophysics is a very rich domain, and that actually one of the reasons I came is because there is more physics going on here than on the particle physics side. Okay, so the now, on the other hand, I think there may be indeed a revolution in the next few years with the LHC. It really depends what the LHC finds. But if it finds supersymmetry or additional dimensions, immediately the question will become, is this a dark matter? Okay, and vice versa, as I tried to explain this morning, if either direct detection or the gamma rays, or did I speak too much about the neutrinos, discovered dark matter in the cosmos, that has immediate implication. So physics is unique in some sense. We have not, it's not astrophysics versus the particle physicists. And I think the merging of the techniques, I agree with you, that the merging of the techniques is very important.
I didn't want to get into the specifics at all, but I think you'll see a number of groups doing a work from astrophysics who have moved into that area. It's amazing what is left unsaid in literature right now about future measurements, actually. Astrophysical techniques used in your field. So that's, I think, a new thing. There were more comments? Anything that was left out of the meeting? General areas. Besides the fact there was no discussion of gas falling in throughout the entire local group.
Easy, Jeff.
Well, I mean, you know, I mentioned something briefly in my talk about gas falling into the Milky Way.
As did
I think star formation efficiency is something that, you know, it is an important thing to think about because we do live in a disk galaxy, and there has been progress lately, but, you know, we still don't know how to make disks in abundance. And the primary way I think we're going to make progress in that regime is to understand star formation efficiency. And talking about low-mass galaxies as well, star formation efficiency, very low-efficiency star formation is what makes them very poor in their stellar abundance or stellar content. So I would just encourage people to think more about gas. Listen to people like Mark, who has been like literally like our lifeline to the star formation community, and think about how to you know, merge together the collisionless physics with gas and star formation.
Can I just
add
one tiny thing there? I think empirical tests of the star formation recipes that have been used in the simulations have not been maxed out. That is my. It's my impression. I mean, now the simulations of you know, of getting high enough resolution that I think there are more predictions that you get out of the resolutions and say, fine, my feedback recipe does this for me, but has other consequences too.
I think about talking about star formation in terms of feedback is really not the right way to think about it. It's in terms of efficiency and.
Yep.
Sorry. What were you?
No. You are purposely ignoring me because I'm the only one who said that the Milky Way formed all by inflow of gas, even the halo. I mean, so I had to say something. The chemical evolution studies the abundance evolution in gas. Okay, so and I think being the only one, because the all the other speakers at least were some doubt, maybe the stars in the halo are formed in situ and not accreted. And so this is something that the people, so-called stellar people, always do, and this is opposite to the galaxy formation people, hierarchical people. I think we should try to get to a common view of all these things, and certainly not ignore gas, because all the physics is in the gas, and feedback, chemical evolution, and so this is something very, very important, and we still don't understand as much as we would like to. Feedback, for example.
I think that's true, Francesco. Once a star is a star, it's just a point in action angle space.
So a detailed examination of the program will reveal that stars, gas, dark matter, black holes, all represented. I want to thank you all for coming here. I had a great time at this meeting. I hope you did. Thank you, Hans Walter, for that heroic presentation, and all of the presenters. It was really fun. So thanks all for coming.